Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a video and podcast show that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Today, it is my privilege to welcome a very, very accomplished professional to our show, Mr. Sumit Anand. Sumit, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ashutosh. Happy to be here.
Thank you. Sumit is the founder of Insight Growth Partners. He's the president of the India French Chamber of Commerce, and he's an MBA from HEC Paris, as we can see from his mug now. Sumit, tell me a little bit about your early work and what were three key milestones in your career stroke life?
Right. Thank you. Thank you, Ashutosh. Very happy to be here. I hope I have something interesting to say that can be
of
value to others. So, you know, my early journey started from Bombay, where I was born and brought up, and was part of a student association called ISEC. And as I often say, that sort of that's where I blossomed initially. It took me to the corporate world and it took me to Europe. Mm-hmm. And I went to Europe just after the Berlin Wall had fallen down in post-1989, in 1990.
Right.
And I was amazed to see this very, this rich continental European culture of nationalities from Western Europe and Eastern Europe coming together. And I think that sort of started me on a path towards Europe initially, which is to go there, do an internship, then go for my master's in management to HEC Paris. And that opened up, I'd say, my mind to the outside world, the global world, to the world of developed nations, to the world of multinationals. And I think so that was one important turning point. I think the other important turning point in my mind was that I was very clear, partly because of my upbringing and partly it was my own journey during those few years, that I wanted to be in India. I saw India opening up in 91. I left India in 92. And I was very clear that I wanted to return to India. And I'd set myself a five-year timeline to return, because I'd seen with friends and relatives that the minute they go beyond 5 years, it was just a number I came up with, it gets harder and harder to come back to India. So I think the second milestone in my mind was to follow through on that and to come back to India in 1996, mm-hmm. less than 5 years, about 4 years. And you know, to come back as a very young manager working for a multinational company. I was working for Pernod Ricard as one of their trusted lieutenants, one of their first Indian employees, who had, who made the effort to be, as my friends called me later on, bicultural. So I'd learned the language, I'd learned to understand their corporate culture and come back and help start a business in India.
Right.
And I think at the age of 26, to be thrown into India, along with, with a senior boss of mine to kickstart a business of a multinational was, I think, a very important turning point, right? Exposed me to a lot.
Correct.
I think the third turning point, after that, I went on to become a country manager. But for me, I think that was part of the same journey in a sense. I think the third turning point for me is when I set up Insight, where I felt that having now been in the corporate world as an employee, trying to work for a company from within, can I bring that experience, that rich experience that I had been fortunate to have at a young age? I mean, I had been country manager at the age of 30. I've been very lucky. Can I bring that benefit to other companies, to assist other companies to succeed in India, to enter India, to grow in India? And in the process, basically as a means to my own end, to become more enriched as a human being, as a professional, and to do that without necessarily being caught up with politics and corporate bureaucracy. So I'd say those are the three sort of milestones, the going to France and return to France, the start, my corporate career kicking off at a young age and then transitioning to
Insight.
Yeah, to Insight.
Wonderful. So tell me a little bit about Insight Growth Partners. What is the kind of work you do?
So, we've been fortunate in Insight. It's a boutique practice, right? Around me as a founding partner, I have a typical consulting a structure with the manager and a team of consultants. Mm-hmm. And essentially what we do is we work with clients on business strategy, right? Now this can be, most of our clients tend to be multinationals. We tend to work either for the head offices, since we have a lot of European clients, I'd say European, but we also work with Americans and Japanese and British clients. And or we work with their country managers, right? When we are, and essentially we help them on everything from entry strategy to growth strategy. We help them on their own organic strategy as well as on their inorganic strategy. So to put it more simply, we help companies that are not in India identify the India opportunity for them or not. I remember one of my early clients co-owners and co-chairmen of one of the large groups out of Europe told me, Sumit, listen, I know you're a great believer in India, but you know, every business does not necessarily need to come to India now. There will be a time as India evolves that we need to be in India. And I think that was one of my early learnings in the consulting profession, right? Is to really be careful on which companies should come here for which opportunity and how. And then we assist them to succeed there. For those that are already here, we help them lay out the business plans. We help them align their top leadership to those business plans. We help them on innovation. We help them now on digital strategy. And then we obviously get involved with everything around external growth, right? Acquisitions, joint ventures, things like that.
So Sumit, tell me, you know, in any kind of a relationship that starts with a company or an organization, say in Europe, and an organization in India, one party has to be willing to come in, the other party has to be willing to receive. Mm-hmm. And then there is this huge behemoth of a government which sits around trying to control mm-hmm. such corporate relationships, marriages that take place. What has been your experience of bringing two potential partners and being able to push through the whole relationship for a win-win for both companies?
So listen, I mean, my premise from my experience is that, first of all, partnerships and joint ventures are not easy to do. More often than not, they actually either fail in the negotiation phase or fail in actuality, right? We did an analysis at Insight that out of the 38 multinationals that entered India in the consumer goods space over the last 25 years, 21 were joint ventures. So that's more than half. But about 15 of them, which is two-thirds of them, actually terminated in a few years, and about one-third of them, you know, were having a public spat. Either they went to court or they were in the press. So joint ventures is really, for me, I mean, I often say this to clients, do not do one unless you really need to. Now, you would need to, either you have regulatory reasons to do it, or either you are able to structure a joint venture where you are very well defined at the early stage. What is it that each party is looking to bring, and what is that each party is looking to get? We are right now working on a joint venture acquisition, cross-cultural joint venture acquisition between an Indian company and a European company. And that is the other aspect that comes into play, which is the culture, which is not easy to define. Yep. Then there's the governmental aspect, as you said, right? I think when one is doing a partnership in sectors where the government is either a customer or is a regulator, clearly that is an important factor, right? Especially when, I'd say in today's day, not only in India, but worldwide, governments have got involved with business. There was a moment where governments had stepped away from business, but in fact, governments have got involved with business. And in India, we felt for some time that it was good that government was not involved with business. Still, I think the realization came that if we have to grow from a low-income economy to a mid-income economy, we need a government which is active. Correct. So it's good that the government is there, but the governments also have opinions, and they are, they have friends, and they have people who have been friends of their opponents. So there is a bit of a minefield that one has to walk through. You know, you don't want to be picking a partner who is considered unfriendly to the government, right? And I think that is in any country. It's not necessarily in India. We tend to talk a lot about it in India because we're a democracy, and that's great. But you know, so yeah. So
based on the hundreds or thousands of people you would have worked with from overseas, what are some of the key things that an overseas potential investor looks for before coming to India?
I think the realization has come over the last 20 years, and I'd say especially over the last 10 years, that India is going to be one of the large economies of the world. Correct. Right? And I think what they look for is to understand what is the business case for them to be successful in India. Because on the other hand, they also know that the India's potential has been talked about for very long, and that there are many failures in that, right? So I think one of the things that they look for is to really understand, if you're talking about B2C business, right? Where is the Indian consumer in their journey towards development, in their journey towards specialization, in their journey towards segmentation, right? Mm-hmm. I think it's very fascinating right now. I wrote an article about a year or two ago that I think we're really living through for the first time what I call the naissance, to use a French word, of Indian brands, right? And that's happening because the Indian consumer is being segmented today, both in terms of income as well as in terms of of habits, right? So I think as a B2C foreign investor, you're looking to understand in this evolving India, where is your opportunity, right? I think the other thing you're looking to understand is what will it take for you to succeed? And I think what amazes a lot of people, once they understand that there may be an opportunity for them, is the quality of talent that is available to them, right? And that's one of the conversations I often have with clients, and they say, well, I need to get a joint venture partner because India is a complicated country and it's complex. And I'm like, well, you know, sometimes a partner can complicate it for you more. What you need is to get good talent, which means hire good people, whether they're your advisors, whether or whether it's your managers, and then look after them well, develop them well, because that's really what will make you successful. And I think once they figure that, hey, here's an interesting market and there is a means to succeed, right? Then the rest of it is really about putting money to work, right?
Very interesting. So let's move to the next part, of your specialization, which is France. And, you know, you are the president of the India-French Chamber of Commerce. You know, I've been going to France since 1983 or 84, several times. Traditionally, French people were difficult to work with, probably because of the language. But I now find that there is an incredible kind of trust that is beginning to evolve between the two countries. So before we get into any people-to-people related matters on France and India, tell me what, post-Rafale, the relationships between India and France seems to be at a new high. What do you think is the reason? It cannot just be buying arms.
No, I think you're right, Ashutosh. I think for me, it's a journey which has been 20 years in the making, right? I think France realized in the late 90s when it looked at the world geopolitically, and this was post the Cold War, that they obviously were part of the European Union and they were, you know, they were close allies of the British and the Americans. But in the evolving world, they had to decide what their partnerships would be. And I think they made a call to make India one of their strategic partners. And I think they have been consistent now for 20 years to support India through that partnership, right? Mm-hmm. So when the first civilian nuclear deal was actually signed with France, right? So this goes even before the Rafale deal, right? Today, if you look at France, it's trying to attract Indian students to come and study in France. I was amongst the first three students that went to HEC Paris. Now, HEC is very well acclaimed.
Yes.
At that time, I used to say it was a loss. It was a hidden jewel that I had found in Europe, right? And they've understood that in order for Indo-French relations to grow, people-to-people relations need to grow. And that's why they're also attracting students. I think what my own view is, why is this happening is, so there's a geopolitical aspect to this, right? And India also today needs that, right? We need, in the multilateral world, we need strong powers. And the fact is, in Europe, the European Union as an entity is a group. But the real strong powers are France, Germany, and the UK, right? And historically, we've had good relations with the UK, and Germany really does not play really at the geopolitical.
And now UK is no longer part of the European Union.
Yeah, that's exactly.
Only two left.
I think the other thing that has happened is that I find both the countries are very similar. You know, I think that there has been a language barrier. I used to have an old friend of mine in business school who used to always be embarrassed that her English was not good enough, and she said that's why we don't speak English, is because we're not good with our English. And I think the generation that has come in France now, there's a very young generation of French people. They're completely international, anglophone, you know, entrepreneurial. It's a new France which has emerged, which has really been reassuring for somebody like me who loves that country a lot, right? And with President Macron, France has really, you know, made a lot of leaps in the last 5 years. I mean, France was voted last year as the most attractive European economy. Many people don't realize it, that France is the largest M&A market in Europe. France is the largest private equity market in Europe. The number one investor in France are American corporations. So I often say if the Americans can invest in France, right, with all the language barriers and cultural barriers, there's no reason why Indians can't do business with France, right? So I think the fact is we don't have historical linkages between our two countries. So there's a bit of catching up to do. That catching up is happening because of geopolitical reasons. It's happening because of people-to-people reasons. And perhaps the most important, if I can say, as the president of the Indo-French Chamber of Commerce, is that French industry has done very well in the globalized world. There was a point of time where people felt that European industry would not survive, you know, globalization. But actually, if you look at the French top 40, the CAC 40, or you look at the top SBF 120 companies, they've globalized. They're no longer just French in France, right? And therefore, for them, India is an important market. If you look at the three big investments that have happened this year, right, that closed this year, Schneider bought the L&T, one of L&T's business for $2 billion. Mm-hmm. We got the Paris airport, which has made its single largest investment outside Europe in the Delhi airport and put close to $1 billion to work. And we've got the Total group, which was, you know, one of the largest oil and gas groups in the world, which was not doing much in India till now, which has nearly put $1.5 billion in renewable energy, in gas in India in this year. So I think French corporates have realized that India is a huge opportunity for them, both as a market, as a talent hub. I mean, Capgemini, yeah, if you see, has actually more employees in India than in France today. And the same applies to a lot of the other French IT giants. And France has had an IT history as well with their engineering pool, which is second to, I'd say, India, or as good as Indian. If you go to Silicon Valley, you'll find Indian engineers and you'll find French engineers. And now in manufacturing, right? I think that's really the next opportunity, right? So I think there's a lot of factors in favor for these two countries to continue to work together. And if I can say one last thing, Ashutosh, going back to the people-to-people side. For me, I often say, I think the French and Indians are very similar for various reasons. A, we both are people who are proud of our culture.
Correct.
People who are curious about history, culture, civilization. We're people who love our food. We're people who love, we love our opinions. We love to argue. We are self-critical. We tend to complain. And at the same time, we want to adventure and do things out in the world, right? And I think, therefore, I see a lot of similarities between
I agree. I'm going to add one other, which is that we've started to love French wines. And what is even more important is that the French have started making some incredible malt whiskies.
That's true. That is true.
I've got several of them, so therefore...
Really? Okay.
So, one more question for you on India and France, and this is, I'm going to take this liberty because you are the boss of the Indo-French Chamber. How large is the trade between India and France, and how is it growing?
So, the trade numbers are... The trade numbers are about 10 billion euros or something, right? They're not large. I think the trade towards India has obviously been in sectors such as aerospace, and that's not necessarily defense. I mean, let's not forget it's civilian.
I know.
It's civil aviation.
Airbus
and is big, and all the companies that support Airbus, right? And since we are not, we have our tariff barriers in place for products like wine, and we are not, I'd say, still a very large luxury market. The typical other exports of France, and it's the other big export typically from France is around agri. And since we have also tariff barriers in terms of agri and we have self-sufficiency, and so those are not really the large tickets for the moment, right? So I think trade is not where the story is. The story is really in relation to investment, right? And in a sense, I was reading a paper on the French corporate story, unlike, let's say, the German corporate story, right? The French corporate story of the last 20 years is really a story of where they have invested significantly in emerging markets.
Right.
They've obviously continued to trade and export out of France.
Right.
But they have actually followed the investment model more than the trade model.
Mm.
And we see that in India. I mean, French investment in India has tripled in the last 10 years. Mm. And it's still, in my view, we're just scratching the surface, right? We did an analysis recently that if you look at the top 100 French companies, 120, about 80 of them are in India. So now they're all here. A majority of them are here. Mm. But if you look at the average size of their business, it's typically, if you leave aside the top 10, two-thirds of them have an average size of a business, which is about 200-300 crores, right? $40 million. So it's not enough. So I think the next 10 years, as India will, hopefully at least double its size, if not triple, depending on which estimates you want to follow.
Yep.
And these French companies are now active in the market with local talent, with leadership at the head office, which is supporting them. I think we will see investment will grow. So I think the France-India story will continue to be about investment. I would hope for India and France's sake that trade would also grow. And I'm sure it will when we sign the EU free trade agreement, that will help things.
I'm sure it will. So, Sumit, I've got time for a few questions for you personally now.
Right.
My first question is that where do you draw your inspiration from?
Okay, good question. as you get older, you have different sources of inspiration, right? Clearly, one of my early inspirations was my father. We spoke about him just earlier.
Yeah.
I think my father was a self-made man, came out of partition and built his life for himself and his family, and with the power of education, and stayed truthful with a high level of integrity into his entire life, right? So I have a lot of, he's a source of inspiration for me for all those reasons and many more, right? And I think I've tried to follow that, whether it's in trying to build my own life and, you know, define my own goals and build, you know, and work through my own journey, or whether it's in terms of integrity, values, which are very dear to me. I think, you know, if I can say so, I'd say to my wife has been an inspiration. She'll be surprised I'm saying this now. I think the importance of family, I always in my goals for my life, family was something that was very important to me. And I think that she has shown me what it means to be family, right? It's about being there for each other, irrespective, no excuses allowed, right? Being your strength and providing the stability. And if I can say this, and I'm sticking with family for the moment, I guess, on inspiration, is I think my daughters inspire me today. They're young women who are independent-minded, which is exactly how we wanted them. They challenge me every day. Honestly, not a day goes by without being challenged on my beliefs and thoughts or something I may say. And they inspire me about things that I have not paid attention to and how I, you know, so one of my recent inspirations from them, I'd say, and from their generation is around fitness, right? Something which really made me become healthier for the moment. It's still early days. So I've lost about 25 kilos in the last 12 months.
Wow, that is something.
And I think that inspiration comes from them. So yeah, I think.
Wonderful. So my next question to you is that if you, Sumit, were a role model to millions of children who closely followed your life choices, what is the one thing you would change in yourself?
So many things we all want to change in ourselves, right?
Ask for one only.
One only. To overcome your fears and your doubts.
Okay. That's a good comment. My next question is that what does success mean to you?
So, you know, I think for me, I'd say there are three things that define what I would like to get out of my life. And if I got that, I would say I was successful, right? One, and you know, some maybe these are standard things, but I mean, this is the way I looked at my life, and I'd say when I was in my 20s, I said, one is I obviously wanted to be a happy or happier individual, right? In my skin, in my heart, in my mind, and the pursuit of happiness, and therefore what allows you to get there is one parameter of success in my mind, right? The other is then you go forward and say, okay, how do you become happy, right? And you know, for me, as I said, family was always important. Professional success was obviously very important. And again, in that finding, not only Clay Christensen says it in his book, How Do You Measure Your Life, right? Finding not only your true motivators, but obviously your hygiene motivators. It's a book that I would recommend to everybody to read, right? Like the book called Happier by Dr. Tal Ben-Shahar. Mm-hmm. I think two books that have really impacted me, I'd say. And therefore, getting professional success in terms of enjoying what you do every day. And obviously getting success in terms of the recognition that people feel that here's somebody who's done something and he'll. And I guess that brings me to the third aspect of success would be to be good, mm-hmm. and to do good, right? If I live my life as a person who was not a good human being or did not try to be a good human being and I sort of went astray, I think that would be a disappointment. And if I did not contribute, give back in some way, mm-hmm. and it's a question I'm always trying to push in a sense the envelope with is, what can I give back with? Is it with family? Is it with friends? Is it about just being the stand-up guy? Is it about larger society? Is it about causes that I believe in? Is it about my alumni association? You talked about HEC. Is it about the chamber in a sense? And is that my way of giving back to subjects I believe in? Is it the environment? That's something I'm more and more interested in. So to, you know, to always give back and to do good and be good.
Wonderful. Sumit, thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure and honor speaking to you. You've been really forthright, given a lot of yourself to this discussion. Grateful to you, and I wish you lots of success.
Thank you, Ashutosh. It's been an honor to speak to you.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world.
Do visit our website www.tbcy.in to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.